for those introductions made, I'll call the first case, which is 03-0500, Hal Hempel versus the City of Barrable. And arguing for Mr. Hempel is Aaron Halstead, Attorney Halstead. And proceed, counsel.
Thank you. May it please the court. I'm Aaron Halstead, and I represent Hal Hempel. The Wisconsin Public Records Statute has given rise to numerous Supreme Court and published Court of Appeals opinions over the last approximately 15 years. However, before embarking on any discussion of the facts of the case or those decisions, it is important to recall what the legislature stated to be the purposes and guiding principles underlying the statute when it enacted it. First, there is a presumption of complete access to public records. Section 19.351A states, except as otherwise provided by law, any requester has the right to inspect any record. The legislature reiterated that presumption through its statement of public policy that accompanied the enactment of the statute. In Section 19.31, the legislature stated it is declared to be the public policy of this state that all persons are entitled to the greatest possible information regarding the affairs of the government and the elected officials and those officers and employees who represent them. To that end, sections 19.32 to 19.37 shall be construed in every instance with a presumption of complete public access consistent with the conduct of governmental business. And finally, that same section in the statement of public policy, the legislature stated that a custodian may refuse to produce public records within the scope of a request only in an exceptional case. The denial of public access generally is contrary to the public interest, and only in an exceptional case may access be denied. That is also from Section 19.31 of the statutes. Hal Hempel submits to this court that the records that he requested in this case are public records. The City of Barrable has refused to produce records that are presumed to be public records, that there is no statutory or common law right that exists that permitted the withholding of those documents from them, and that no overriding public policy exists that makes this an exceptional case.
Do you take issue with the idea that the balancing test should be applied here? It sounds as if you do from your opening comments.
I do not take exception to the idea that the balancing test should be applied because it is appropriate if there is no common law or statutory exception. And if it's asserted that there is a public policy that arises in a particular records request, then the balancing act must be applied.
Well, applying the balancing test, what do you think tips it in your favor in terms of access?
First, I think that the first and a huge problem with the analysis in the Court of Appeals opinion is that there was no fact particular analysis made about the records that were requested in this case or this particular record request. That is, the Court of Appeals has made a judicial exception to the statute that's a blanket exception. And the Court of Appeals has said that in cases where a public employer has made a promise of confidentiality of persons from whom information is taken during the course of a discrimination investigation, then the public policy that the court found to encourage victims and witnesses to discrimination overrides the purposes of the statute. So the first problem with the balancing test here is that it's a blanket exception that's been carved out, not regarding the particular facts of this case.
If that's your position, why did you not challenge the specificity of the custodian's response in the trial court?
The question of the specificity of the response, in fact, we argued on summary judgment to the circuit court that all of the statements that were made, that none of the statements that were made in the affidavit of the records custodian tended to show that there were facts that in this particular case justified the withholding of the records. We did not argue with the concept that the records custodian had listed pages, I think at least eight different different reasons why that custodian believed the record should be withheld. So in that sense, we did not challenge the specificity. We didn't claim that the custodian simply said, no, we're not going to disclose these. There were specific reasons that were offered, but our argument was that there were no facts that justified the withholding.
Your position now then seems to be that because of the promise of confidentiality and the approach taken by the Court of Appeals, that that's too far-reaching, it's too blanket the rule. Is that the idea?
That's the first thing that I respond to, Justice Crooks, in terms of your question about this balancing test. The other is this, that in every case, our position is that in every case in which you have a public employer's investigation into allegations of discrimination, whether it's gender-based, age-based, disability discrimination, you're going to have essentially the kinds of facts that you find in this case. You're going to have someone who's made an allegation of discrimination. You're going to have witnesses who have been interviewed, including my client, Cal Hempel, and the complainant. Other employees within that same public employer, you'll have documents that are generated. And really, there's nothing that we can find about this case that distinguishes it from every case in which discrimination is alleged. And so our position is that this court, in various opinions, in the Linsmeyer case, in the Wisconsin News Press case, has said that there are no blanket exceptions that apply in cases where you get past the common law exception, the statutory exception, and move on only to the question of public policy. And that's the initial problem with the Court of Appeals decision here, is that it's a blanket exception. But beyond that, our position is that there are no facts that are of record in this case that show that it's distinguishable from any other.
So you don't believe that this is distinguishable from Linsmeyer? Linsmeyer involved the teacher, in, as I recall, in the Fox River Valley School, which just on the facts here, this was an investigative report. It was done under the auspices of a sexual harassment. Let me ask you, if the court would hold your way, what in fact would this have any impact on the investigative reports, law data reports of various departments, say the police department? What is
Commission Justice Wilcox, is that a person who makes requests is entitled to know the facts that underlie the investigative process.
When I look at what they released, they released the reports to redacted, and certain portions were obliterated so you couldn't see who it was. When I read the appendix in this case, I got very good idea what was alleged and what was allegedly going on. So, but what you want to know is exactly who said what. Is that what you want to know? The names of the people.
That is not the only thing that we believe that the public is entitled to know here. And because the court performed an in-camera review of the documents, we're not entirely sure, and I'm certain that Attorney Bowl can speak to this, but it is our belief that beyond those documents that were produced in a redacted fashion, that there's also at least one other document, some type of a report that was prepared that hasn't been produced at all.
There's a memo in the file. Other than that?
I'm not sure. I haven't. If that is the only document that wasn't produced whatsoever, that may be that it's a memo in the file. But there are, if the court reviews the documents that were produced, including, by way of example, the document that was attached to the dissent's opinion in the Court of Appeals, Judge Dykeman said it tells us little more than nothing. By the time you get through reading all of you're trying to connect dots with no real idea of any context whatsoever. And so the reason that it's important here is not to know who, and although I think Officer Hempel and the public is entitled to know who said what and in what context, in a way that's different than what we have in these redacted documents, in order for the public to understand what the government is doing in terms of investigating whether it is making proper investigations, whether the conclusions that are being reached are fair. There's no way to draw those conclusions or, in a way, have any type of public oversight in this process if there's an inability to get to documents that mean something once you have them in your hands.
This is not argument, it's just mainly a question here. It seemed to me that you mentioned the in camera inspection that the court made. So you had the city itself making a decision that the city then released these records, as far as I know, and you're saying you don't know if that's all the records.
That's
you're
true.
Saying that, and so I concede that that is maybe a question. But the impact, let's say we would agree with you and release these records, what, if any, impact would this have on raw data investigative reports in police departments around the state?
It is.
In other words, is this an exceptional case? You're saying you should get it here, but we shouldn't do it there, or this just everything's open?
Our position is this. That in every case in which the custodian of the records has made the decision not to release them, then the burden is on that custodian to show what are the exceptional circumstances in that particular case that justified the withholding of the documents. And so, although I'm not saying there are no cases in which there has been an internal investigation into discrimination in which there might not be a document or part of a document that would properly be withheld, there has been no showing in this case that this is exceptional.
I guess what I'm getting at, that we're dealing with sexual harassment here. Is that, and you're saying, well, it should, in areas of this context, sexual harassment should be released. Are we going to lie and say, well, yes, you're right, but this won't affect other things like raw data police reports and investigative things that they do every day?
Justice Wilcox, if I'm understanding the question correctly, you're asking outside the context of the sexual harassment investigation,
but
involving a law enforcement agency.
Well, where, if any, line drawing is there to be, if any?
I think that in this case, and this court has been quite consistent in saying that in the public records context, the court, whether it's the circuit court, court of appeals, or this court, looks at these on a case-by-case basis. And so the precedent that would arise from an opinion in this case would be to say, in this particular case, here are the documents that the city withheld. The court has examined them. There's been no showing by the city that here it was justified. In the next case, a city or other government body would have the opportunity to make this argument that particular records in that case should be withheld.
And, of course, that's the argument that your opponent makes in this case. I mean, they emphasize they don't think that they should be released. I mean, there's no difference than in your position. It's a case-by-case review as far as the balancing test.
I believe that's true. And if the court, as I'm sure it has, reads the circuit court's amended decision on summary judgment at page 3, of that document, the court talks about the fact that in this case it was appropriate. However, if you search the amended decision on summary judgment, there's really, it's difficult to find on what facts the circuit court felt that this case was different than the next case or any previous case that involves harassment.
Mr. Halstead, is it significant from your point of view that the investigation has been completed in this case? Does that make any difference?
I do believe that it does make a difference.
Why?
Because under Section 19.35, sub 1, sub A, sub 1, there is an exception that deals with cases in which a requester makes a request for documents that contain personally identifiable information concerning the requester. And the legislature included an exception that talks about the fact that in those situations, the document need not, any document or records need not be disclosed if there is a pending investigation, arbitration, proceeding, enforcement action, or one that may, you know, the circumstances that may lead to such a proceeding. This is one in which, as of August 11, 2000, the city acknowledged that no discipline was going to be imposed, and there's no evidence that any further such proceeding was contemplated.
Counselor, I want to bring you back to that August 11th memo. There's a statement in it that says, if another complaint of a similar nature is received, this complaint may be considered at that time. Doesn't that imply that perhaps this investigation really isn't good?
I believe that it implies that the investigation into the allegations that were made in this case have been concluded, and that no discipline is going to be given, and that it's speculative whether something might arise in the future. And certainly our position would be that there, as of this time, any investigation into this issue was closed.
Well, but, you know, it says this complaint, meaning the one that was filed in regard to the action that we're currently concerned with, may be considered at that time. So if the matter is concluded, why would it be considered again at a later time based on a similar occurrence?
Well, we certainly have the same question. Although, again, I would point out that it is stated in a very contingent fashion. If another complaint is received, then we may do certain things. And certainly I do not, our position is that to allow the question whether records should be produced to turn on that type of a speculation is not appropriate. We also think that it's, you know, the Court of Appeals has said that it's important to encourage victims and witnesses involved in a discrimination or harassment complaint to come forward and give information, and we believe that's true. However, ironically, if any type of discipline were to have been imposed on Officer Hempel, and as a law enforcement officer, were he to have been discharged, suspended, or reduced in rank, he would have had the right to a hearing, evidentiary hearing, under Section 6213, and the right to have there be a public hearing. And so the only thing that kept these documents from coming out in that type of proceeding was that no discipline was imposed. And so it's ironic that the only type of case in which the records can be withheld in this type of a context would be one where either there was no merit found to the discrimination, or for some other reason, the employer decided to impose no discipline. That's really the only reason that Officer Hempel, for example, was not able to subpoena these documents in the context of a 6213 hearing.
And that certainly would go into the consideration of public balances. In other words, the public's right to know, the public had this confronter, and your client's right would have been satisfied. If it had gone further, he would have been able to get all of these documents had this gone further. Now, the question that I have is just one of just how people react and how they act. If people know that they're asked a question and that will be everything they say is going to be made public, do you think that there is any interest in that the public has or the city of Bearable or the public in general in having some ability not to release that until it's necessary for a open trial?
I think that the public, and we said this in our brief, Officer Hempel does not dispute that there is a legitimate purpose and a very important public policy that underlies the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act and other laws that encourage people to file complaints. In a case such as the one before the court, where the matter never did and never will go to any type of an administrative proceeding, then effectively what has happened here is that the city, through its policy and through its decision not to impose any discipline, has made it impossible, if that's what the law would be, made it impossible for the public ever to find out what has happened in a case where a municipality has decided that it's not going to pursue further some type of discrimination. Obviously, in this case, Officer Hempel denied any type of discrimination that occurred, and no discipline was imposed. But in another case, let's suppose that there was some type of rampant discrimination that a city did not investigate, and imposed no discipline, and the public wanted to know, why didn't you do anything in this case? And the employer said, well, until the matter goes to hearing, we feel that it's the best public policy not to allow it to be disclosed. But on the other hand, we've decided to impose no discipline, so there will be no hearing. And so in that type of case, there's no opportunity.
Now, let me ask you, but the
assuming for sake of argument that this court were to agree with the city of Baraboo that the policy interests that are advanced in this case on their behalf are valid, is it your position that then the legislature should make that determination as opposed to any municipality in terms of the public policy interests? Is that what you're trying to say?
That's one of the things we're saying, which is that what has happened here is by the offering of the city's reason for not producing the documents and then the Court of Appeals decision that in cases where a municipality has adopted a confidentiality policy in the context of a discrimination investigation, then effectively what's happened is that we have a judicially created exception here. And if there were going to be that type of blanket exception, it's one that the legislature would have enacted, and this court has said that it's for the legislature to decide by statute if you're going to have a blanket exception to the public record statute. And so in response to your question, it is for the legislature to make a decision if this type of exception is going to be carved out on a blanket basis.
Also, let me follow up with regard to that confidentiality. Before getting on the Supreme Court, I was a circuit court judge, and every once in a while, I would hear the objection, "Your Honor, I object. This was a fact, not an evidence." And I'm wondering, with regard to your issue as you presented it, whether it assumes a fact, not an evidence, or that in this instance, not in the record, the issue as you presented in the beginning of your brief is whether the Court of Appeals heard and its holding, and insulating Chapter 19 public record request, all documents generated during that employer's investigation into employee's allegation that a co-worker has engaged in sexual harassment, now I'm getting to the important part, by the mere act of promising confidentiality to persons from whom the employer receives information. Is there anything in this record that indicates that those who were asked questions were promised confidentiality?
I believe if we review the affidavits that were offered on summary judgment by the chief of police, the then chief of police, there was certainly a reference to the existence of a confidentiality policy, and I believe that policy is part of the record.
That's right.
And it was our understanding, it's my understanding of the facts, that the city takes the position. I'm looking at the city's appendix 112, where the former chief Loeb stated that he assigned Captain Kluge to undertake an investigation of the alleged harassing activity by Officer Hempel, and he was aware that the department's policy provided that they would conduct a confidential investigation, and he assigned Captain Kluge to undertake the investigation and considered the investigation to be a confidential internal investigation. And certainly all of the arguments that have been made, in my understanding, have been on the factual premise that the now chief and then I think the assistant chief or Captain Kluge had promised confidentiality.
Well, that's exactly what I mean. Since you put it in your issue, it gives me some cause to pause because I'm not sure that it accurately describes the record. If it were just part of your argument, I might let it go. As I understand, and you can look at page 145 of the same appendix, the same kind of thing, where that is the affidavit then of Dennis Kluge talking about the confidential investigation. That, of course, emanates from the procedure that's adopted by the city, which incorporates the EEA procedure, and it says in the appendix 148, conduct a confidential investigation of all alleged harassing activity. My question, since you put it in your issue, see, I don't think a confidential, having a policy that says you should conduct a confidential investigation necessarily translates into a fact that every person that was interviewed was promised happens is that they have a policy of conducting a confidential investigation. Whether or not that confidential investigation results in each person questioned being promised confidentiality, I think is a distinct question. Do you agree?
I agree that it's a distinct question, and I agree that for that reason that it is important to take a look very closely at the affidavit submitted by Thomas Loeb and Dennis Kluge in support of the summary judgment motion. But it certainly throughout their affidavits, they talk about what I understand to be a confidential personnel investigation pursuant to the policy that that requires the promising of confidentiality person to persons who are interviewed. And so that is the factual premise on which I believe the city has argued for withholding records throughout the proceedings.
But you have a problem as to what confidentiality means. It can mean that they won't reveal your name, but that the information isn't confidential. And your second problem is how can a local unit of government promise confidentiality when the state statute says something is open? If the court so agrees that it is open, maybe that promise is not valid as a matter of law, if there is such a promise. I know you're red light on this one, but this is a case where the individual who has a right of privacy, your client, is asking for the records, and there are exceptions for an individual asking for the right of his or her own records. Number two, city have to give, or the police department give notice to all the other people involved in this investigation if they reveal what was said under Nosworthy?
I think Wozniacki requires notice if the custodian intends to release documents in response to a records request that implicate I believe the words may be privacy and reputational interests of the persons who are the subject of the document. Now, in this circumstance, all of the questions that are in evidence here have to do with acts that were allegedly committed by Hal Hempel, the persons who, from what you can tell from the blackened portions of the documents that were produced, have to do with persons who say that Officer Hempel said things.
Yeah, but they may not, a fellow officer may not want Hal Hempel or fellow officers to know their topic because of their privacy interests.
I think that they may well not want the public to know, or including Officer Hempel, to know that they're talking, but I don't think that the act of providing information creates some type of a privacy interest or reputational interest in that person. The only thing that is known if all of the documents are released are what they said about Officer Hempel in response to the investigation.
Which may be in violation of the unwritten code of not being a snitch.
That may be, but...
Watch TV. So that's how I know. All right. Now, so that's one of the things that bothers me. One other thing I want to clear up. Personnel records, as such, they're not all excluded. So that they don't all fall under any common law or statutory exception.
Sure.
That's the basis on which you're here. And the reason why Hal Hempel wants these records is irrelevant, as I understand it.
I think it's irrelevant the purpose for which he wants them, except for... It is relevant that under section 19.35 sub 1 sub AM that he is requesting records about himself.
Sure. Now, I want to just deal with the fact that this is on file for 3 years and it may be used in a subsequent conduct proceeding. Seems to me that a single, even long, but single course of conduct on harassment. This is not a sexual contact case.
Sure.
This is okay. so on sexual harassment, which makes it an unpleasant work environment for the female officer, right?
Chief Justice, if you're saying that releasing the records would make it unpleasant?
Well, that's what the complaint here is.
Correct.
Okay. So maybe one course of conduct over a period without being reprimanded or brought to anybody's attention would not be the basis for discipline, you know. You forgive and forget kind of thing. But that after this is brought to the department's attention, and should he continue it, would be of importance, and that may be why they're keeping it. Is there any indication of that in the record?
The only indication that we have is that in his August 11 letter, the city had said that it was not going to impose discipline, and it was going to keep this in the file for 3 years, which really made it impossible. There was no way through a grievance proceeding or through Chapter 6213 for Officer Hempel to address that sword hanging over his head, so to speak.
And do you think you've waived the 19.351 AM argument?
No, I believe that.
I expected you to say that. Why?
For one thing, it informed whether, first of all, if the court reads Section 19.35 sub 1 sub AM, it does not require a person who makes a request for records that contain information or records containing personally identifiable information to present the request in any particular fashion. And the court can read all the way through 19.35 sub 1, and it says nothing. The burden, in fact, is on the employer under sub 4 that states if the request is received by someone who identifies him or herself. This is Section 19.35, sub 4, sub C. If the request is received from an individual under 1A or 1AM, from an individual or person authorized by the individual who identifies him or herself, which obviously the city knew that I was requesting this on his behalf, and secondly, states the purpose of the request is to inspect or copy a record containing personally identifiable information pertaining to the individual. I think that it was clear that if you read the request, that's what he's asking for, records that contain information about him, because it's about the investigation that concerned him.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Office representing the City of Barrow and the City of Barrow Police Department.
Good morning. As I see this case, there are really two issues. I didn't know if one of the issues was going to be discussed at all in the arguments today, and that is whether the court should review this case under 19.35, paragraph 1 AM. When appellant raised this statute for the first time on his appellate brief, it has now been raised on arguments, and so I would like to discuss that issue. And the second issue, which is the issue that I think is the reason that this court really accepted this case for review, is whether the public's right of access to the records in this case is outweighed by the harmful public effects that result from the public release of a rank-and-file police officer's personnel record that included a confidential investigation report prepared under the city's harassment policy that promised a confidential investigation. Briefly on whether the appellant has waived the arguments made under 19.85 or 35, parent 1, parent AM. I think one thing we need to make clear in the record, because there is a statement in appellant's brief that he had to struggle reading the redacted copies of the complaint. And that is a misstatement. The appellant in this case was provided with a clean copy of the complaint made by Officer Hauber, and he was also provided with a clean copy of those complaints that were filed by the Sauk County Sheriff's Department. And uh, the, the redacted copies that were submitted to appellant were submitted in response to his public record request. As far as the review right that appellant has of this statute, I'm sure this, I know this court is well aware of 809.62 print 6 of the court rules, which specifically states that if a petition is granted, petitioner cannot raise or argue issues not set forth in the petition unless ordered otherwise by this court. The petition for review doesn't mention that's the statute at issue there that's been raised by appellant in his brief. The issue presented in his petition for review doesn't mention it. If you look at his table of authorities, that statute isn't mentioned. The Court of Appeals didn't consider it. The Circuit Court didn't consider it. The city, in responding to the request for records, didn't consider our response, didn't take that statute into account. And I would point out that in the response that was made by our police chief, there was at the end of the response, a specific point was made. If you have any legal authority, if there another matter that you think should be brought to our attention that we have missed, please contact Jim Bowl, our city attorney, to discuss it with him. The appellants have not objected to the specificity of our response, and I believe appellate courts are allowed to review a matter that the lower court has not had an opportunity to review, and frankly, there is no record that for the court to review under that statute.
What kind of record do we need? We've got this whole thing is on a record. It's a summary judgment. So we've got everything. So what is it then a review? Your concept that he doesn't fall within 1 a.m.?
No, Your Honor, when we responded to the records request, if we had interpreted the request to be a request for personally identifiable information, under 19.35, parent 4, parent C, the Wisconsin statute, it states that if an authority receives a request under sub 1 A or AM from an individual or person authorized by the individual identifies himself or herself and states that the purpose of the request is to inspect or copy a record containing personally identifiable information pertaining to the individual that is maintained by the authority, then the authority follows a specific procedure. There's a different standard that is not, and at least in my opinion, that is not a public records request. That is not a record that would be released publicly, but only to that individual. And there's a different analysis that we follow, that we are to follow, and that analysis is set forth under under Section 19.35, Parent 1, Parent AM. We did not follow that analysis. Our response does not follow that analysis, and they did not object to the fact that we didn't follow that analysis. Had they raised that objection at the lower level, at the lower court level, we could have applied the balancing test under those sections of the statute. The Circuit Court would then have had an opportunity to review our response, and the matter would have been before that court. The plaintiff's complaint didn't raise that issue.
That bothers me about that argument is that 4C relates to 1A or AM. And wasn't this a request under 1A?
It was a request under 1A. And my point, Your Honor, is that the city, I don't dispute the fact that we didn't respond under AM. And they never objected to that. They never raised that issue until they filed their brief in this court. If we had had an opportunity, if they had objected at the first level, we would have responded to that. And we would have covered this issue.
Subsection 3 says, if the authority determines the requester doesn't have a right to inspect under 1A, the authority shall then determine if the request has a right to inspect under 1AM.
That's correct. I agree.
Back to 1 a.m., you say he would have had to explicitly state, I'm under A and AM.
I don't know that he'd have to specifically state that. I don't know that I would want to go that far. Certainly, the statute implies that he is the state. He's asking for personally identifiable information. That's nowhere. You will not find that in any correspondence. My point is that If that indeed is where they were going with this case, then we deserve an opportunity to, at the Lord, at the very first level, to have that pointed out to us. He was invited, counsel was invited to provide that authority to us. He did not.
So, you think this case ought to be remanded?
I submit it's waived on appeal on this petition for review.
Well, now that we both have had an opportunity to brief it, right? This issue.
Yes.
Sometimes, even though an issue is waived, if the parties have an opportunity to brief it and do brief it here, the court says, okay, we're going to consider it. You know, it's already here. This is an issue. We take issues that are statewide. Sometimes it seems wasteful to then say, well, it's waived. We're not going to decide this case.
When you say it has been briefed, I would say, at least from my standpoint, it's been briefed in a very cursory manner. I took the position that it was waived. I stated in my response that even if it was not waived, that we would still fall under sub 1 at this proceeding as far as releasing these records, and this came out on the appellant's argument, that the letter that was placed in Officer Hempel's file indicated that this matter would be in his file for 3 years and was, in essence, the complaint could be brought back to life, so to speak, and that would include certainly the investigations, but that would not fall under under sub 1. That it is then a record that made at that point in time, and I believe you look to the at a record request at the point in time that you receive it. It is the facts that exist at that time. And we're talking now of a memo that was placed in the file in the year 2000. So at least until 2003, those records would have led to possible enforcement action. And the court in the Linsmeyer case makes this very clear, I think, that in that case, it was clear that it could not lead to enforcement action. And in this case, I believe that it could. But I go back to the fact that when we responded, we did not deal with that particular issue.
And it falls under AM when the employee gets it. Employee can release it.
I believe that subject to a possible tort claim for some sort of defamation, I believe that's whatever the employee chooses to do with that record.
So it's an open record. It's not a confidential release to the employee, unless the employee wants to make it confidential.
Assuming the employee feels free to distribute it to the news media or whoever.
And if the news media came to you and they fell under one, that's not before us. We use two different standards for one and AM.
Well, as far as if your question is whether in conducting a balancing test under AM, you would apply some of the same principles that you do under 1A, it would be my position that, and frankly, I haven't, since we did not do it, I don't know that I can really answer how we would respond to that and what sort of results that balancing test would have. But I believe we would apply a balancing test, and not every record that might qualify for release under this section. I would further submit to you, since we're getting to that point, that this record may very well not get to be released because of the nature of the policy that the city has.
And one other question. Suppose you had a criminal case against a police officer for sexual harassment, or a civil case on sexual harassment, and the plaintiff wants to look at his personnel files to see if he has engaged in sexual harassment previously because they want to use it as other acts evidence.
In my opinion, that record would not be a record that would be open for public inspection. I think, and that, I believe, is really leads to the second issue in this case, and that is the harmful effects that that will follow or might follow from the release of personnel records of a rank-and-file police officer. I view the major issue is really being divided into two parts. One part, I feel the Court of Appeals handled in a very brief manner and did not carefully evaluate the arguments we had made at that court level, and that argument being that the personnel records of rank and file police officers are, except in exceptional cases, such as a deadly force case, not subject to public release. And the second part of that argument, that issue, is dealing specifically with not only are the personnel records of police officers subject to some special treatment, of rank and file police officers subject to special treatment, but in this case we go to another level and we have a confidential investigation that took place under the city's harassment policy. I think it's important in this case that the city did not keep a secret of what the complaints were against this officer from the public. We issued redacted copies of the complaint and of both complaints by the fellow officer as well as by some complaints that the police chief had received from the Sauk County Sheriff's Department. We released that and we released the letter of disposition. So from the standpoint of what does the public really need to know about the workings of the City of Bearable Police Department, I believe that those redacted records accomplished that purpose. In fact, the Court of Appeals said that they felt that we went beyond the balancing requirements of the open records law by what we did.
Counsel, that touches a lot of concern I have with the Court of Appeals opinion. I'm not sure that statement is correct. Is there anything in the Court of Appeals opinion that you think, even if you would prevail, that this court should address or tighten or modify?
Yes. What is that? It is the way the Court of Appeals handled the personnel records of rank and file police officers. They said factually we did not submit sufficient proof to back up the Cohen-Hangman line of cases, which this court has repeatedly affirmed in Wasnicki, Linsmeyer, Wisconsin News Press. Those cases where this court had an opportunity to cut into them and maybe even find that the law that was announced in the Cohen and Pangman line of cases is no longer the law in Wisconsin, did not do so. And I think the court has to have a picture of what has been going on in our circuit courts up to this point when it comes to personnel records. Many of you have been trial judges. And so you're aware of the fact that in a traffic case, in an OWI case, in a criminal case, a defense attorney would like nothing better than to get his hands on the personnel files of the police officer that's going to testify in his case. Not that he knows that anything is in that file that might help him, but there might be something in those files that would help him. That's what Pangman and Cohen were intended to do when they requested those records back in 1991. So my point being that since that time, before the records law was not really a major issue as far as the release of records, but really up until this point, I believe it's fair to state that personnel records of rank and file police officers are not getting into criminal cases. They're not a matter that's before those courts. So when you ask a municipality such as the city to provide the factual basis that if an officer who makes an arrest and is going to testify in a case would be concerned about being cross-examined about his personnel records, it doesn't happen. It isn't there. I mean, because the courts, they don't get those records up to this point.
But are you asking, it isn't clear to me, it seemed part of your response suggested you want a blanket rule.
No, I'm not asking
that. Yeah, I want to clarify that because your brief is
saying that
there should be no blanket rules.
Right. And I think that this case needs to be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
What makes this case exceptional? If we're looking at this case by case, Are there any allegations of threats, say, from Hill to any of the complainants in this case?
Well, as far as allegation, it depends on what you mean by threats. I mean, there were comments made towards women in law enforcement, which are in the publicly released portion of the documents that we released, statements that he made, women are brainless, allegedly made.
But what would make this particular case exceptional?
This case is an exceptional case because the substantive law of the state of Wisconsin has stated that police officer personnel records are not released unless there's an exceptional case, such as a deadly force matter. And as was done in the Areola case, police officers are rank and file police officers because they have to go to court and testify. They make arrests. They have constant public contact as far as making arrests. And this court has repeated these very public policies that are being, that would be impacted if this court decides that the personnel files of rank and file police officers are open. And I submit that if the court goes to the point of releasing this record, putting aside the confidentiality policy that the city has, I see that as a separate matter that requires a separate analysis. But I don't believe you even need to get to that issue in this case. When you look at when you look at the sealed records that you have in your files that were not released, I encourage you to read those. And I submit to you, if you can find in those records some reason why those records should be thrown out, shown to everybody, they will not only deal with this officer, they will deal with things that were said that other people, officers, may be implicated. Chief Justice, you mentioned the Wisnicki. This was a Wisnicki notice time. We did use the Wisnicki notice before we released even the redacted records. We did follow that procedure. I would submit that we would have had an endless task of complying with potential Wisnicki problems if we would have had to release. We didn't release those records, so we did not. We did comply with Wisnicki when it came to the redacted records that were released, and that Wisnicki notice was sent to the officer that filed the complaint and to Officer Hempel.
They would object.
They did not object. But there was definitely a redacted
record. Counsel, what makes this case unique? Because I want to make sure that you stay true to your premise of no blanket exceptions. It sounds as though you are close to that line with taking the position that when you're dealing with a rank and file officer, that's when it's not deadly force involved, that as a blanket rule, these personnel records should not be available by you. So you're going to say to me, no, I'm not saying that. I don't want to say a blanket rule. But what makes it different? What makes it unique and distinguishing other than rank and file officers?
This court has advised municipalities that they will review these cases on a case-by-case basis, and that's how we are supposed to review them. So I would suggest that in this case, you would look at the nature of the documents that we are being asked to release and what is contained in those documents. Do those documents reach the same level of compelling interest that a deadly force public record would reach? My caution on this is that I believe these records are of a nature that if this court decides to release them, you have opened the barn door on personnel files of police officers. I mean, if I were to envision a set of facts where a municipality could withhold those records after a release of the records in this case, if a release of the records would be permitted in this case, I'm not sure what factual scenario might justify it. And I think the circuit courts will shudder when the defense attorneys find that they can get access to personnel records.
I'm sorry for interrupting you, but I'm not hearing an answer. Maybe you're giving it, and I'm not hearing it, but I need to hear it. And that is rank and file and not deadly force. Is there anything else that makes
We are dealing with, I believe, sexual harassment is a serious matter, but we are not dealing with a serious, it's a minor, it's sort of a personality problem that the officer has, that sensitivity training might well handle. In other words, I see this as a, in fact, I think Judge Dykley referred to it as a minor run case. I mean, he used those words, and I thought to myself, yes, that's the very reason why a rank and file police officers, that if you release these, it's out there with these records.
What does the rule protect in this case? Does it protect the officer Heppel? Does it protect people who complain against Heppel? Or does it protect the department's decision on how it acted?
If you're speaking of the specific, it protects rank and file police officers, which in this case would be Officer Heppel, from being cross-examined in court about the contents of this particular incident.
But he's the one who wants to act.
I mean, and if this court has said that, it is irrelevant that he wants those. The purpose of the requester's purpose and who requester doesn't even have to identify himself or herself to the city, and that is not a matter that we can reach.
That's true, except for AM, which makes the exception for an individual whose records we're talking
about.
So that's why here it does matter that Hempel is the requester. You say, in answer to Justice Bradley, do you have any more factors? No discipline, sex harassment is not a most serious thing, although you're not denigrating its seriousness, a personality problem. Any other factors that she shouldn't look at?
I guess those would be the two major matters that come to mind, and the fact that the nature of this particular incident is of such minor effect that it, to release this record, my point is, to release this record because of its lack of compelling interest would basically open the files, the personnel files of rank and file police officers.
Well, of course, that may be one of them. I'm sorry, Justice Pressett, go ahead.
Mr. Cole, you argue that it is in the interest of police officers and law enforcement not to have law enforcement personnel records thrown open. What is it then that is driving the demand of this police officer to set this precedent? I don't quite understand what is motivating the officer.
I wish I could answer that question as to what his motivation is. If you read in the briefs that were filed at the circuit court level as well as at the court of appeals level, he was asking for these records because he wanted to protect himself in the event a subsequent proceeding was filed against him based on the chief's three-year window that the case could still be open. In a number of places in the appellant's brief, he makes reference to the fact that the appellant needs this information to so he can interview the witnesses. And if you take that at face value, that would take him under 8 a.m. would kick him right out because he doesn't get it if that's his reason for wanting those records. The very, very essence of AM 1 is that if it may lead to future enforcement action, that those records are not released. So to now come forward and change his strategy and say that the 3 years has passed, that is really an irrelevant point because we must look to the time when those records were.
Are we entitled to know whether the August 11th letter is still in the personnel file?
Well, I think the letter itself states that it would be removed from his file after 3 years. And that's about it. And it would go beyond the record for me to tell you anything further than that. But I would just like to add one more further answer to your question, Justice Butler. You said who is affected by the release of these these records, and we talked about Officer Hample. But I submit that who is really affected by this is the public, because, and these are the things that we are to look at in doing the balancing test. What are the harmful public effects that can result from the release of these records? And I have mentioned some of those things and items, and this court has repeated them. Number one, rank-and-file police officers would be inhibited. Their privacy rights would be invaded if these records are released, and they would feel inhibitions from going to court and being cross-examined on those personnel records. That is not good from the public standpoint. Secondly, when an officer makes an arrest, makes a traffic stop, if the individual who has made that traffic stop would be someone who has his personnel record and starts spitting stuff out at him, hey, I'll see you in court on this because your personnel file says this, this, and that. Well, what's that officer's response? Do I want to put up with this? Going to court and having that matter possibly brought out, sure, the trial judge is going to try to deal with it as a collateral issue, not relevant. We're not going to try it, whether that really happened. But at the same time, it's going to have an adverse public effect on that officer in making arrests. He's going to be less inclined to make that arrest. And we believe, and I think if you look carefully at the affidavits,
I don't quite follow. Is he going to be less inclined to make an arrest or more inclined to make a good arrest?
Well, let's hope that any arrest he makes is a good arrest, Your Honor. But if the officer has in his mind that it's not only the arrest, it's any investigation that he's working on, that I'm going to be cross-examined about my personnel file if I have to go to court on this case, human nature tells me that's going to be something that's going to click in that officer's head. That doesn't happen now because these records are not, you can't get an officer, police officer's personnel record. And so, but I would only hope that, if I could just say one more thing on that, even if the officer does make a good arrest, that doesn't assure him that the defense attorney isn't still going to try to attack his credibility in any way he can by trying to use some record about that officer that he might feel would intimidate that officer. We believe that the adverse public effects that I have already listed have been acknowledged by this court in a number of its cases. You have not had a direct case dealing with the personnel files of police officers.
Mr. Mullen, you've got police officers, that's in any professional judges included, I suppose. You've got good officers, you've got bad officers. How do you get at situations where you're dealing with bad officers if people can't go back and inspect what the officer has done? Looking at the facts of this case, if you've got allegations that this officer was engaged in sexual harassment, I guess if I were the complainant, I guess would I be more concerned about that information coming out, or would I be more concerned about the fact that the department took no action in the case? I guess my concern is in terms of who is going to be affected, how it's going to affect public policy. How do you get at discrimination? How do you get at sexual harassment if you don't deal with it and deal with it, either the officer or deal with some public hearing of the issue?
And the city was sensitive to that very issue when we released the redacted records that we released. We felt that the public does have a right to know some of the workings of the department and how we handled it. And so that was our purpose in releasing those redacted records that we did. So I believe we in our case, I think, and you will notice in my brief, I kept underlining my time is up. I kept underlining, let me just finish, that in this case, because I do feel that this is an exceptional case. And may I summarize?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
And before you do, I have a question. Would mental health, serious mental health issues, would that be an exceptional circumstance like deadly force?
I'm I'm not sure I understand.
Suppose that the underlying problem of this officer is he has serious mental health problems. It's not just a personality quirk. He is very antagonistic towards women. And is capable of domestic violence. He's capable of violence on an arrest. And that's all part of your investigative file. Let us suppose. Would that tip the balance otherwise?
As far as publicly releasing that record?
Yeah, you're releasing them here to the requester, right?
Is that part of, should I analyze this under AM or under 1A?
That's where you want to be.
I believe the same analysis would take place.
I want to know if it's an exceptional circumstance.
Whether it reaches the level of a compelling need to disclose that information. And I would have to, the balancing test is not an easy test to administer. I would have to study the nature of that, whether we are... There's of course, medical information that has separate confidentiality issues that we would have to deal with. It would be far more complicated analysis. Whether it reaches the level of a compelling need, I would really have to, I'm sorry, I would just have to know more details.
Try sexual contact. That's the claim here, not harassment. The same effects.
I would, in that particular situation, I would come back to this is a matter of a rank-and-file police officer that does not reach the compelling level.
Let's try a discriminatory prosecution or arrest that this officer has said he arrests people with blue eyes, thinks they're distrustful, taking out of the race issue, but discriminatory. Uses some basis for making arrests that is not relied upon in terms of what happened. Releases everybody who's got brown eyes, arrests everybody with blue eyes.
And this would be a case where the investigation is complete, everything is done.
Same exact facts. They say they're not going to take any action now, but it's going to be in his file for 3 years. Same exact facts.
I would find that to fall in the same line of argument that I made, that it would not be a record that would be released.
Deadly weapons. Okay. Summarize, please.
Yes. It is the city's belief that the harmful public effects that would be realized by releasing these records far outweigh the public's need to have to be provided with the information that is in this file. We didn't really cover the confidentiality policy, but we need to, the public interest that would be affected by releasing those records is that victims of harassment will be less likely to come forward. There'd be an increased likelihood of retaliation by publicly releasing such information against persons who come forward and make complaints about sexual harassment. It will further reduce the likelihood of a full and complete investigation of the matter because of the lack of cooperation of the witnesses. As far as the police officer's files, the adverse public effects that will be realized by publicly releasing those records is the officers will be less willing to testify in court when faced with the potential that their personnel record will be a subject of cross-examination. We believe that it will cause them to make fewer arrests, and it would be contrary to a complete and thorough investigation, or contrary to a complete and thorough investigation of complaints, which we believe there's a strong public interest in police departments being able to do that and getting the cooperation of fellow officers.
Is there any other employee that you would put in the same category as police officers for purposes of the general rule is... I understand you saying it, although you might not like my characterization, is no release except in exceptional circumstances.
No.
What about teachers?
No. Thank you.
began my presentation to the court asking that the court recall, before anything else, what the legislature has said as it relates to interpretation of the statute, and that is that under Section 19.31, only in an exceptional case may access to the public records be denied. The court has asked the city, why is this case exceptional? The city has stated that it's exceptional because in this case, no discipline was imposed, and there was harassment, but minor, in the way of a personality conflict. The city has also said that the standard as it relates to police officers is that records are not released unless there is an exceptional case. That turns the question and the analysis on its head. The question is not whether Hempel or the public can show that this is an exceptional case in which an exception to the general rule that officers' records should not be released, but instead the analysis should be, can the city show that the general rule that there's presumed access to records should be set aside in this case and that an exception should be made. There's been a fair amount of discussion about these cases that relate to personnel records of police officers. In this court, in the Wisconsin News Press case, said that in these cases, talking about the Pangman cases and the Journal Sentinel case, in these cases, the Court of Appeals did hold that some personnel records of police officers should not be released to attorneys representing criminal defendants. However, in each case, the Court of Appeals clearly applied the balancing test in making determination. There is no broad protection that's afforded to personnel records of police officers. Rather, the Court of Appeals' opinions that the city has cited in its brief and in oral argument talk about the fact that some personnel records are not available to attorneys representing criminal defendants. The truth is that whatever records are released that relate to a police officer, the trial court judge sits as the screening mechanism, if you will, for what evidence a jury is going to be allowed to use. A real question arises in a case where there's a case where an officer was not disciplined and has apparently a personality conflict or some minor disagreement with a fellow officer, what relevance could that type of questioning have at a criminal trial? It's difficult to understand what that might be.
Counsel, just for clarification, in terms of the status of this, two reports were released. One report by the police officer from Baraboo, and the other report from the sheriff's department.
Correct.
And those two were released in a redacted fashion. Is that correct?
The records that were released by the city of Baraboo were released in a redacted version. The records that were released by the co-defendant originally in the case, which was the county, were released in an unredacted fashion. And the question here is not whether Hempel himself or whether I have had the opportunity to see those documents. It's whether, in a particular case, the release that was made by the city of Baraboo is one that comports with the public record statute.
That touches upon the question of Justice Prosser, I believe it was, to your co-counsel of, what's going on here, to paraphrase the question. As I note in the appendix that the documents that were released with the March 13, 2001 letter are set forth on page 155, and they contain both the officer's report from Baraboo and also contains a redacted copy of the sheriff's report. But as you note, you have received unredacted copies of both of those.
I've received unredacted copies, and my understanding in the comparison here, there were officers, deputies of the sheriff's department who conducted interviews of some deputy sheriff.
Yes.
There were other people who are strictly city officers, and so what we do not have here is complete overlapping of the records that were released. My recollection is that we have records that are unredacted from the county that are records that the county officers prepared in the course of their investigation, because there were county officers who are also interviewed as a result of the city complainant.
Yes, and that's set forth in the appendix, the sheriff's department's unredacted report, or full report is set forth in full in the appendix, and your opposing counsel noted, as I understood his arguments, that both had been released, that you had access now to the unredacted copies of both of the two reports.
I believe that what we have are unredacted versions of what the county released, which are, not, as I said, not the, there's not a precise overlapping between the documents that the city had created during its investigation and the documents that the county had created because of the city complaint. Our position is that regardless of the analysis that this court does, whether it is under Section 1 or 1A or Section 1AM, the result is the same. The city, any member, whether Hempel requested these records, although we believe that he has a greater right to access, any member of the public requesting these records would have the right to those records under 1A. The city has not made a showing here of any exceptional circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Halstead. Thank you, Mr. Ball, for your argument in our recurring issue before this point on public records, and one especially if it involves police officers, law enforcement officers. So thank you, and the court will take a brief recess so that the students who wish to leave and others may do so, and our next group of students.